You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, September 14th, 2015. You're listening to episode 172. We're recording this episode a couple of weeks before that actual date, because in reality, right now, while you're listening to this, the day that it's posting, I am probably pulling my hair out, freaking out from stress and two great big deadlines looming in front of me on September 15th.
And I'm just laughing because I don't have any deadlines.
You don't care. You're on vacation, actually, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm back from vacation.
Oh, you're just back from vacation. So you're well rested.
Back like I never left. You know?
Yeah, right.
So good times.
I took the 14th off work.
It was a good idea. Yeah. That was a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
First day back at work, you won't be there. Nice. It's like an extra vacation for me.
Oh, man. It's going to be so good.
I don't actually see you that much, so at work.
It's true.
I see you a few times.
I mean,
a day,
too much so. As it is. So
we're in meetings together. More regularly.
Too many meetings, man. Yeah. So many meetings. I'm sick of meetings.
I feel like 50% of my job is meetings some days. So
I agree with you.
And what's funny is I don't have nearly as many meetings as like my boss does or other people. You know what I mean? Like they're in way more meetings than me. But,
right.
Shelly, who works for me, is always like, you're in so many meetings. And I'm like, but I'm not though. Like part of the problem is the impromptu meetings that happen a lot.
Yeah.
Like I can't go to Greg's office without it turning into a 20 to 30 minute conversation about work stuff.
Sure. Sure.
But I mean, like we just, because we work on so many things,
so much
together,
stuff going on, right?
Like it becomes this conversation every time, you know, and I get stopped a lot when I'm walking around. Like,
oh, you're a popular guy. Everybody wants a piece of the Slingerland.
Yeah. I didn't mean that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Day jobs.
Ooh. Day jobs. No, I like my day job, so.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So, yeah, no, I enjoy my day job.
Good.
It's, I mean, it's obviously, you know, if I was like a full-time game designer or something awesome like that, I wouldn't complain, but, you know.
You'd probably be making less money, though.
I'd be making less money, yeah. Well, that I guarantee, because I'd probably be making $0.
Right. So, you know, hey, there you go.
So, yeah.
I have to talk for a second about this show that Christine and I have been watching.
What's it called?
It's called Departures.
Oh, you told me about this. Yeah.
Have I talked about it on the show?
I'm just going to check out. I've already heard this story.
All right. Well, I think I've said this before on the show that we like watching travel shows, travel documentaries. And I started watching this one. It's on Netflix and it's called Departures. And it's these three Canadian guys, a cameraman and then just two dudes. And they decide to quit their jobs and go on a trip, just travel the world for a year. And not go around the world, but just travel around the world,
right?
For a full year and film it all as a documentary. And these guys are like super bros, you know, the most douchebaggest bro-y bros that ever broed, right?
Don't bro me unless you know me.
Yeah, those guys. I mean, it's kind of sad and pitiful, right? Because they're all about high fives and fist bumping. And taking their shirts off and showing their shaved chests at every possible opportunity. It's what they do, man. And right. All they ever want to talk about, they're going to these beautiful places and surrounded by all these amazing pieces of history, but all they really want to do is get drunk. And it's hilarious. Like, so the first episode, by the end of it, you're like, I mean, those guys are awful, but something about that was kind of entertaining. So I'll watch one more. And by the end of the second episode, you realize just how dumb these guys are.
And you feel bad for them.
And they're really in over their head. They don't know what they've gotten themselves into. And you just want to see more. But by the time you get about four or five episodes in, you are in love with these guys. Because you can see that they're figuring it out. They're like, oh, holy crap, there's a whole lot more going on in this world than just getting drunk every Friday and Saturday night. And there's other people out there that have lives that are way harder than ours, and we are a couple of privileged little jerks. But they're still bros.
That's funny.
It's really, really fun. I am loving the show. We're almost done with season two. That's all that's on Netflix right now. But anybody out there who likes
that out.
Yeah, anybody out there who likes travel shows, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Right.
Super fun. Departures, it's called.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's great. That's my current love. On the television.
On the telly.
Yeah. What are you up to?
shoveling rocks.
Shoveling rocks.
So yeah, we're still trying to finish that landscaping, but it's coming along.
Yeah,
so.
Good. Yeah, it looks great. It looks fantastic.
Happy with it. So, yeah. And it was, you know, basically free. I mean, except for the stuff we had to buy, but compared to paying someone to do it,
it was basically it was free, except for all the money that we spent on it. Yeah,
but we didn't spend that much money. I think the most money we spent this whole ordeal was on rocks.
Yeah.
How much do you think 10 cubic yards of river rock cost?
River rock. We're talking river rock that's like quarter size.
Well, the size you saw in my driveway.
Yeah, quarter, maybe silver dollar size.
Yeah. So that river rock delivered to my door. How much do you think that cost?
I'm going to guess that was $500.
$440. Yeah. So
I only knew the ballpark because my folks have bought rocks before. Right, yeah. So
it's not cheap, but I honestly thought it was gonna be like $800 because I just assumed the value of rock was higher than it is.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, the value of rock, I mean, that whole market's collapsing, man.
Right, it is. It is. So
yeah
good job.
Have you been playing any games?
Not since last time we recorded. No.
Okay.
I'm back playing that stupid survival craft game on my phone again.
Oh, really?
Not on my phone, on my iPad.
iPad, so, okay.
This is basically a Minecraft ripoff.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, harder.
I've been playing some Minecraft lately, too. Yeah.
So. You know what I find with that? Like, there are two things I like in the game. Three things I like.
Mm-hmm.
One is exploring, right? Mm-hmm. But in this game, there's no map, and there's no way to make a map. So if you go exploring and you get lost, you're hosed, right?
Right.
So, but in this world that I'm in, I happen to get lucky because I'm right on the edge of the ocean, and where I built my house, it aligns with the rising sun, right? So I always know how to get home in theory. Mm. I just try and keep track of if I've went left or right out of my house in a general direction, sure. Kind of. And then
so you don't even have a compass?
Well, so I have a compass now, but the problem is if something kills you...
Oh, you lose
and
all
you respawn,
stuff.
Right. If you can't get back to your spot in time...
Yeah.
So the most dangerous time to die is usually the first day out,
because
I'll travel a long ways, and then you die, and then you end up respawning way back at some place.
Mm-hmm.
The scariest time to die is when I'm making my way back, though, because I'll have like this loads of meat.
All that
I've
stuff
collected,
you've collected, yeah,
all
yeah, yeah.
The ore and stuff. And like you're trying to get back to your house, and you know that if you die right in front of your house, you're going to be a day's walk behind, and you're not going to have your compass to get back to it. And your stuff only stays there when you die for like 2 minutes, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. And what'll suck is like, let's say that you were walking through a snow area and like where you slept, right? And then, or there's a snow area between you and your stuff, or worse, your stuff is in a snow area. You lose your clothes when you die, too. So you're basically wearing boxer shorts. And you'll freeze before you can even get to your stuff. Because have, like, temperature
stuff. Oh, temperature is even in there. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a really good survival game with kind of a Minecraft core.
Mm-hmm.
So exploring, super fun. But I get kind of bored after that a while. You can, when you start worlds in this game, you can put in a seed, which is like a word.
Sure.
And I think if I looked on the internet, it would be like, if you put the word snow in, it's going to be mostly snowy. And if you do that, you must hate yourself because the snow places are the worst because you're always dying because you're always freezing to death. And like, as you start to freeze, the screen like freezes over until you can't see anything. You're dying and you can't see anything.
Mm.
And it really sucks.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it certainly is. But I just, last time I never put a seed in. And now last time I just put in a bunch of random letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that did, but it's like I broke the generator that generates worlds because there's all these really weird formations and like random formations in the sky that like aren't connected to anything. And it's awesome. It's like the best world I've ever accidentally made. Cool. So I also like hoarding, right? Like I'll build a bunch of treasure chests and then I'll be like, I'm going to fill this treasure chest with coal and this treasure chest with iron and this one with food. Then I'm basically free to play however I want, and I'm always stocked up on everything that I need, right? Mm-hmm. I actually have a whole treasure chest just full of clothes, so that if I ever lose my clothes, I just throw a new set
on. Go back in there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Or the last thing is, like, big projects, like, for no reason. Like, right now, I've got this brick house I built on top of a mountain, and I'm hollowing out the mountain from the inside.
I don't know why. Just because.
Really, just because I can.
Yeah, sure.
Because I've got all the resources I could need.
Yeah.
The best resource you can get in this is diamonds.
Oh,
And you can get diamonds two ways. One, by killing werewolves. And not every werewolf gives you a diamond. And werewolves only come out once a month.
Mm.
During the full moon or the new moon, depending on which It changes every time you generate the world.
Okay.
So in this one, it's the full moon. And, but I found like a huge, like a place with tons of diamonds in it. So like, and diamonds are what you need to build a compass. Diamonds are what you need to like coat your stuff to make it really amazing.
Okay.
And I have this huge cache of it. So I just kind of like, just do whatever I feel like now. I'm like rich in this world.
In just this me, you know? Strange, lonely virtual world.
Right.
You are wealthy.
And there's literally no one else. Like, yeah. There's no other people. I kind of wish there were like people, even if they were like pirates and I had to like shoot them or something.
Yeah, Minecraft, they have villagers. They go, hmm.
Do you ever do anything with them? Or
you
no?
can trade with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you can give them things and you know, you basically just give them stuff and they'll give you something back and you don't know what that thing is going to be until you get it. And
is
then
it usually better than what you gave them?
Not always, no. And so, but then you know that guy, in the game will remember, if you give that guy 10 chickens, he'll give you a watermelon. And every time you give that guy 10 chickens, he will always give you a watermelon.
Oh, so it's random, but once it's decided, it's locked.
Right.
Interesting. That's kind of cool.
And different villagers will give you different things.
Right.
And the goal is to get emeralds out of villagers, because you can mine for emeralds, but emeralds, I think, are even more rare than diamonds.
Okay.
And so if you get your trading, oh, and then the more you trade with villagers, the better stuff they'll give you. So if you trade 10 chickens to that guy 10 times, then he likes you. And next time you can trade him 5 chickens and he'll give you 10 watermelons or something like that. Oh, so they get to know you, right? So you can build up the relationship. But so the highest level for all those villagers, and I'm sure listeners out there might tell me I'm wrong because I'm remembering something incorrectly, but the highest level is they'll give you emeralds for stuff.
Okay.
So, but it's cool. See the trick about dying in Minecraft is to always carry a bed with you and then just wall yourself up somewhere and put out your bed and sleep in it and then pick it back up again. Because if you die in Minecraft, you always respawn back at the last place you slept.
Yeah. Here you do too.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But the problem is, if it's a day's walk away, and you die, you respawn a day's walk away from where you were.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So
yeah,
the compass makes it really easy, because once you have the compass, you can just wander around and just not die. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing, is don't die.
Yeah.
So, which sometimes can be extremely hard. I've learned tricks, like I now bring a stove with me, like for smelting.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I always make sure to carry some ore with me that I can smelt.
Yeah.
Because by carrying that, if I'm freezing, all I have to do is drop that, put it in and start cooking something and stand next to it and I'll dry off.
Oh,
and
sure.
Stop freezing. Because if you get wet, it actually makes it worse. Like, really? If you fall in the water or get rained on, it triggers the cold thing. Mm-hmm. So, and you can also starve to death and get eaten by stuff.
So that all that survival stuff, that is definitely a level above Minecraft.
Right.
And that's all stuff that I don't care about.
See, that's what I like.
Yeah,
so, you know, that's the...
Survival.
And they've got a lot of things that try and eat your face. Wolves, hyenas, tigers, lions, rhinoceros. Those are rare.
Mm.
And rhinoceros, you want to kill them, but you want to make sure they don't hit you, because if they hit you once, I think you die.
Oh.
But they give you, like, 8 meat if you kill them. Mm. Bears are very important to kill, because bears give you fur, which lets you build the best clothes you can make.
Hides.
Yeah, and they give you fur. Wolves give you leather. Lions don't give you anything.
Wolves give you leather.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah. Also, cool. There are piranhas in most of the water.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's actually funny, because lions will like try and get close to you if you're near water, and they can't, so they walk into the water, and then they get eaten by piranhas. It's pretty hilarious. Because like,
that's cool.
When one piranha gets you, there will be 6 there all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah.
And it's bad news bears, yeah.
Speaking of piranhas, in one of those episodes of Departures,
they go
fishing. I think this is in Season 2. They go fishing in somewhere I think it was in Brazil. I don't remember
piranhas there for sure.
Yeah. And so they hook a fish. And they're reeling in, it's very exciting. And then they pull it up out of the water and the fish is half eaten. Like, it's a bloody, bleeding mess. The
piranha's got it.
In between when they hooked it and in the 40 seconds between they hooked it and reeled it in, a swarm of piranhas ate half that fish. It's amazing. Amazing.
Now, I had heard that, too, piranhas will actually generally not attack people. They go for little stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. That could be.
I don't know if that's true, but a fish would make sense, right? Oh, they're like, oh, this fish is in distress. Let's eat it.
Yeah, right. Easy target.
Piranha, though, man, the teeth on those things are insane.
And then they caught some piranhas and made soup. They made piranha soup, and they made piranha soup with the jaws still in the soup bowls.
That's gross.
It was pretty funny.
Did they make it or did somebody else make it?
They made it. They made it. It was pretty funny. Because one of them was sick and then they fed him nice, hot, delicious soup and then he put a spoon in there and pulled out a piranha jaw. And it was pretty funny. Anyway, it's a good show. You should watch the show. Builders, yeah. You should watch the show. It's well worth your time. And they're Canadian, so they say a boot.
A boot.
Yeah.
I still, the best travel documentary I've ever seen are those Ewan McGregor ones, man.
Those are great too.
Long Way Down.
Yeah.
Check them out.
Yeah. And this is the same kind of thing. It's kind of the adventure travel documentary thing. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
All
right. Let's talk about the feature of the week.
What's the feature of the week this week, Jason?
Feature of the week this week, we're going to talk about self-publishing.
Ooh.
And whether or not we would self-publish again for me, or if you would self-publish. We've talked about this before, but it's a fun subject to come back to because our opinions change on it so much.
It's true. Yep.
So I have specifically self-published before. I used, when we say self-publishing, we mean via Kickstarter, like actually trying to fund and publish a game. I did Water Balloon Washout.
Yep.
I learned a lot, and I said I would probably not do it again, but I think I would. I think I would do it again. So topic over. Good. All right. Good discussion.
Okay, I'm going to pitch a game now.
I do think I would do it again. I learned so much, I would kind of like to put that to the test at some point.
And you're far enough out from it now?
Yeah, that I forget the bad stuff. Right. So, one of the things that came up, obviously, when I got Ramblers back, my wife had said, you could always just self-publish that. And that terrifies me because there's a lot of components in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, but enough to where it make me very nervous, right?
Mm-hmm. Cards, poker chips, cubes. Yeah,
and we could get away with cards and tokens and cubes, or even just tokens. I mean,
Right.
Oh.
You falling asleep on me?
Yeah, I'm tired. But anyways, so that frightens me a little bit. I think if I was going to do it, I would do something smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Just a card game again, you think?
Yeah. Just like a 54 card game, even something even smaller. And I think, and I knew you were going to talk about this, I would do Game Crafter for production with the note that if we do more than 1,000 copies, I will go somewhere else. And get go to AdMatch or something, get a bigger print. But
GameCrafter
just up their game.
Card quality. Yeah. Their card quality. I don't know exactly when they did that. I missed the official
pretty
announcement.
Recently.
But if you guys got a copy of the BTGCCG from us at Gen Con, then you've seen the new card quality and it's really good.
It is. It's same they use for Magic cards now.
Yeah. So
it's Black Core, I think.
Yeah, really good quality stuff. There's a lot to be said for that. So self-publishing, man, and you're right. My feelings about Kickstarter and things have evolved a lot since we started doing the show.
You were high, you were low.
Yeah.
Now you're middling.
I'm middling now again. Right. Yeah. So I have toyed pretty seriously with the idea of kickstarting Card Game Simulator.
Yes.
Because I think it's very marketable. I think it's an easy thing to put on there and be goofy about, and I think it could do well.
I agree.
Likewise, I think that that Finish It also could do well on Kickstarter.
Indeed.
Yeah. Card Game Simulator is not ready for that right now, and I haven't had the time to put into it to make that happen, right? But I've said this before, I'm just not a business guy, right? I don't have a head for that stuff. I don't have a head for production and estimates and shipping and on and on and on. But if you do it through GameCrafter, they handle a lot of that stuff for you, especially production and shipping. They can do all that stuff for you, which is really a cool thing. So I don't know. I mean, so let's talk through positives and negatives again.
Okay, so negatives. Those are easier. Let's do negatives first. Yeah. Negatives. Not funding and being embarrassed.
Yeah. That's a big negative. That's a bummer.
Calculating wrong and losing money.
That's an even bigger bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing amazing and losing money.
Which has happened a lot.
Yeah. Which is even, that's the scariest one.
That's the absolute scariest
thing. I would rather not get much and lose money than go bonkers and then lose a lot of money.
Yeah. I would rather not fund. You know,
right?
Then be wildly successful and still end up in the hole.
And something that was always terrifying to me was the idea of not funding. That's a lot less terrifying to me now because bigger companies have not funded, and they just cancel right at the end, you know? And I think that's what you do now. It's just kind of a thing.
You know, and that's the thing that that is a new thing, right? That's kind of new this year. I never saw anybody do that before this year.
But, and this is what's great. Like, you can think, well, you can't, like, I think, oh, you cancel a game, man. I mean, bringing it back later. But let's talk about a great example of why that's not the case.
New Bedford,
right?
Yep.
So that game, it was gonna, as Chris pointed out the first time, it was gonna fund, but it was gonna be tight, real tight, and no stretch goals.
And they had confidence in the game.
Right, and it was very non-Dice Hate Me publishing style, right?
Right.
Not like going bonkers.
Right.
So they said, you know what, they canceled it, and Chris said, we're gonna retool this, they did some new artwork, they did some new stuff with it, they brought it back. $107,000, I think, on that thing.
I don't know what the goal was, but...
$30,000.
Was it 30?
Oh, actually, okay. I think it was even lower, because I think they lowered the goal because they were trying to hit it sooner.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the psychology of that is
there's so much of that in there, right?
And, like, I don't even... Like, I don't think it's wrong that publishers do it. I think it's sad that they have to.
Yeah.
Because you're just... You're not even tricking anyone. I mean, I guess maybe some people are tricked by it, like, oh, they only need 15,000 and they've made this much. So yeah. But like the fact of the matter is, no, they need more than that. Mm-hmm. Like, and you should know that. And they're doing this just because you are not backing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sad that publishers have to do that. But a lot of them do, you know what I mean? A lot of them have to undercut the price to get it out there.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with the publishers for doing that. I mean, you do it because you got to make, the game.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's a silly psychology to it. Right.
Right.
You got to deal with backers being mad at you if things don't go well. That's, that's a negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any more negatives you can think of? Probably. You're pretty good with negatives.
I'm a very negative person. So here's a question. I don't know what the answer to this honestly is. What if you have your campaign going and you fund, but you set your goal low and you get to a point where you know that your game funded, but you didn't fund high enough. Can you still cancel?
Yeah, you can still cancel at any time. There are funded games that cancel. That's totally cool. But I would caution anyone to not set, like for instance, let's say Dice Hate Me sets it at 20 grand and they know they need 30 to print. Right. Mm-hmm. Now I want to be clear. This is me making numbers up. I have no idea what but I'm going to guess because they consistently are funding Kickstarters and consistently have game sales and they partnered with Greater Than Games. I'm going to guess they could swing the 10 grand to get it printed and then know they're going to make money on the back end. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's my guess, but I would say any company of their size could probably get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously we've seen companies like Fifth Street that could not get away with that. Right. Cause they didn't have enough capital to do that.
Right.
And again, that's just my guess, but I would think, you know, but if that happened to you or I, we're Fifth Street now, right?
Like, from day one.
Well, except for that I would cancel. Like,
if
I needed 20 grand and I made 10 and that was my goal and it just hit 10, I would cancel because I'm not going to be willing to spend 10 grand.
Right.
Because the market tests tell me that, like, the game's probably not going to sell that well.
Right.
Now, again, if I have a bigger company to where I can get out and market my games to people and get to a lot of cons and have booths at cons, that's different, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, even with Water Balloon Washout, I've had decent success with that just by going to small cons and selling, and I've only went to a few, you know? And if you have a distribution network, you can get away with that, right?
Yeah.
And I know that sometimes two publishers, I've talked to publishers who will set a goal for 30,000 and they just make that goal. And that's going to let them print like 2,000 copies, but the price break they're going to get to 4,000 and they believe in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll put the extra money in, print the higher number, knowing they can sell them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's smart because if you can get a better deal, you know, why not? If you believe in the product, you know?
Sure.
So, and there's so much on Kickstarter right now. That's another negative is it's easy to get lost.
How do you stand out?
You know?
If you're going to stand out from the crowd, you really need something. Something that's going to pop, something that's going to be exciting, something that's going to say to everybody who's browsing through that thing, hey, I've got something that's different.
Right. Two companies that have been doing a very good job with that, I think, are Katarsky and Green Couch, right? He makes games that are under $20 with shipping a lot of times.
Like, yeah.
And that's really good, right? Because that's, you know, he does stuff with crazy good artwork and low goals and, you know, cheap amounts to get the games. And for a smaller company, I think that's just spot on, right?
Yeah.
Because it's easy to go, I like their stuff. It's not, it's like $19. Like they have Avalanche at Yeti Mountain right now, which is a great game. Played it at Gen Con. I don't know if you got to play it.
I did not. I'd like to.
It's a lot of fun. And then the artwork's by Adam McIver, which is like, I mean, you can't go wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And he did the graphic design too. Mm-hmm. I love games where he does the graphic design and the art because everything just kind of ties in together.
All fits,
which
yeah.
is super cool. Yep. Matt Wolf is a good designer. You know, and you trust that Katarski is going to put out a good product. Mm-hmm. So, like, for $19, like, why would I not do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is on Kickstarter right now if you want to see it. It's probably already funded at this point. I was going to say something on the last episode, and I forgot. But on day one, it was already at, like, I bet it's over $3,000 on day one. So,
that's yeah, pretty good.
No, it was well over $3,000. I bet it's over $4,000 at this point. Mm. So,
as of this recording.
Yeah, as of this recording, yeah. But at this point, if you're listening to this right now, if you haven't heard of it, it's probably already funded, but it is still out there. Or what Tagmeier is doing with the Button Shy stuff, where he's doing the games. He manually assembles the games at his house with his group of people that work with him because he believes there's a different way to do games. And I think that's cool. Like, I respect that, you know? And so I think though, you know, setting yourself apart some way, right? You know, I mean, a company like Dice Hate Me sets themselves apart by making bigger games that are, you know they trust are good. They know the quality to expect. They always have really good art and graphic design. But, like, they're a bigger company, so I think it becomes easier, right? They stand out because they have so many followers. But these little companies have to find ways to stand out that's more inventive, you know? I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we want to talk about pros?
Sure, pros.
So I like writing, and I definitely like prose better than poetry, I think.
Yeah.
So get it, prose.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I not mean, funny. I felt pretty good about it.
No, I mean, I was going to go, but then you called it out as a joke, and then that killed it. I mean,
because with you, I never know if you're going to go with it or if you're just going to be like, that's stupid, let's move on.
I will always go with it unless you get in the way of it. That's part of improv, man. Yes, and.
You're not an improver.
I'm trying, but you don't let me.
I don't think that I don't let you. I think that I let you improv, and you're so terrible at it, no one can even tell you're improvising. They just think you're weird.
I think we need builder feedback on this. Who actually, builders out there, please tell us, who kills the improv?
Yes, let's get builder feedback, and also let's expect that they're going to not like you and like me instead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yes, and we will. See, I did the yes and
thing. Uh-huh. Yeah. You did it perfectly.
I know.
You did it just right.
Yes, and I always try to.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just mocking you.
Yeah, I know you are. So, okay.
Pros.
Self-publishing pros.
If you do well, you get more of the money.
You do indeed. Not that there's a lot of money out there to be had, but
I was trying to make it sound better than it was.
Yeah, you can keep what extra you might maybe end up getting.
I'm sure those dudes that did Exploding Kittens, they got some change.
I figure they did okay, right?
Yeah. I'm going to guess they easily made over $100,000 in profit on that. Maybe way more.
Who knows? I mean, it was like $9 million that it funded
something
for?
Something stupid like that.
I don't know.
Idiotic.
People love the game, though.
Every time I see somebody post that game on Facebook, oh, I got this game. I just roll my eyes.
You want to unfriend them or something?
I do, yeah. But only because like, I'm like, I don't want to be like, oh, that money could have went towards other Kickstarters. Because the fact of the matter is they introduced Kickstarter to a lot of people.
Sure.
But I don't believe
that money wouldn't have gone to other Kickstarters.
I don't believe those people are going to come back to Kickstarter unless the Oatmeal does another game. You know?
Well, they're going to come back to Kickstarter with the next 10 expansions to Exploding Kittens.
Right.
Aren't they?
I hope they do 10 expansions because you're stupid if you don't.
Right. Easy money.
Right.
Easy money. Other pros. Just visibility, you know?
Yep.
Visibility. I mean, for people in our position, if you can have a successfully funded Kickstarter, you're more likely to have, when you're talking to somebody about stuff that you're working on and projects you've done, people are more likely to go, oh, you're that guy. You know, positive or negative, people are going to recognize you.
Right.
You know?
Yep. It's free marketing, really. So
absolutely. Marketing for you, and it's a way to build your brand as a designer.
It's also market testing.
Oh, man. Free market research.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if people hate your game, like, then you could cancel and not have spent all that money to publish a game that nobody wants.
Yep. Yep. And, okay, so other stuff, hopefully if you fund, you're going to be able to print more copies than you need to fulfill your Kickstarter order.
Exactly.
So you have extra copies of your game that you can do whatever you want with. You can sell them. You can give them away. You can.
Step one.
You know?
Do Kickstarter. Step two, print extra copies. Step three.
There's no step three.
There's always step three. What is step three always?
Step three is profit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you probably won't.
Probably so, not.
I mean, I've profited off Water Balloon Washout. Not a ton, but I mean, I've made my money back.
Right.
That I spent above and beyond the Kickstarter. So that makes me feel happy.
Sure. Right. So, I mean, I think probably though, the thing you need to hope for, the one and only positive that you should be focused on is the pride of success.
Yep. Your game gets published with your name on it.
Right.
In the manner that you want to publish it.
Right.
And that's important, you know?
Yep.
So for some designers, that's a deal breaker. There are some designers who don't even want to go to publishers because they want what they want. And,
and they want their way. Right.
Mad respect, dude. Go for it.
Yeah, you know, sure.
Some of us, like Rob and I, just want to give games to publishers so they'll publish them for us.
Those publishers are going to add their own flavor to it, and that's right. Fine. So
and
be
you
it.
Might not like what they do with a game. You know, I mean, that's always every publisher, you run that risk.
Yeah, right? You're going to take that chance. So, right.
Obviously, a lot of publishers are very in tune with what designers want, and but in the end, it's a publisher's call. I mean, that's just...
Right.
It's got to be somebody's call, and since they're paying the money, it should be them.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's their call. I think that in the end, that has to be worth the risk for you. That reward of satisfaction of getting the project done and into people's hands, that reward for you has to be worth all the risk and all the stress and all the headache and heartache and the risk of failure, frankly. Because if you're hoping for all the other potential successes to make it worth your time, then it's probably not going to go well for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even if you're successful, even if you get the game funded, if you have higher expectations than just the satisfaction of having it done,
you may be disappointed.
Yeah. You're probably getting in over your head.
Yeah.
And that for me, I think is still why I'm not ready to do it because I'm not sure that satisfaction and that excitement for me personally will outweigh the stress and the work that would be involved in dealing with every other part of it for me.
Right.
So I think that in the end is why I'm not ready to do that. Not ready to run my own Kickstarter yet. So, that's enough.
All right.
Okay.
You should pitch a game then.
Okay. I'm going to pitch a game.
Oh, he's getting his phone.
It's where my notes are.
He has a few notes on the phone.
I have some notes. I always have notes.
It's going to be a long pitch where he reads a lot of stuff.
We'll see. We'll see. So, one of the things that those guys in Departures did is they went to Morocco.
Oh, I know what this one's
about. Yeah, and Morocco. They went to a couple of cities in Morocco. In one of them are a leather tannery. Okay, and there are many cities in Morocco where they do this. I'm going to focus on the leather markets in Marrakesh. Okay, and it's worth your time, builders, to pause the show right now and go to Google Image Search and do a search for leather. Just do it leather in Morocco. Okay, or
leather tanning, leather tannery,
whatever, in Morocco, or in Marrakesh, or in Fez, actually. There's another big one in Fez.
You should really do this, because Rob showed me the picture, and you should really do this, because it will make it a lot easier for you to understand what Rob's going to say.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm gonna paint a word picture here now. For those of you who are driving, or are too lazy to pause and look at Google right now. So, In Morocco, they still tan and dye leather in an ancient way, where they take the raw animal hides, right, and they scrape all the fur and any little remaining bits of flesh, frankly, right. Most of it's sheepskin. They scrape all that stuff off the hides, and then they put them into these big tanning vats, and these vats are filled with water and limestone and pigeon droppings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In the truly traditional ancient way, in medieval times, it was much, much worse than that. If you're curious, it's worth reading the Wikipedia article on leather tanning. I read this and I was fascinated by the true history of this. But so they put the hides, the fresh hides, maybe even hides that had been stretched and dried for a while, but they put them into these vats, and these vats are white. They're like mud brick vats. Most of them are lined with tiles, so the water stays in there and doesn't soak away through the clay or the mud bricks. And the enzymes in the pigeon droppings create a chemical reaction which tans the hides. And I won't get into all the science of that. It's actually a several step process. It's fascinating reading, but simple explanation is the enzymes in there. They tan the hides and they turn the skin into leather. The next step then is they take them out of these vats, and these vats are probably, they're rectangular, maybe they're square, but they're probably 6 feet square or 6 by 8, right? Big vats. Then they take the leather, this wet, sopping, dripping leather, all these hides, and they carry them over to these other vats. Okay, these are big round vats, big mm-hmm. circular vats. And all these things are probably anywhere from 3 to 5 feet deep. Okay, and they take them over to second part of the area, and all of these vats are brown. You know, they're not whitewashed. They're just brown. They're just the raw mud brick, again lined with tile. And they're put in water, and that water has different colors in it, dyes. And then they put the hides in there, and they soak in there for anywhere from a couple of days to a couple of weeks, absorbing all this color, all these different colored dyes. And when they pull them out of there, the next step then is they carry them up the stairs, all these sopping wet hides, leather now, and they carry them up onto rooftops, and they lay them out to dry in the hot Moroccan sun for days, until they're dry, completely done. And then they have leather. They have raw leather that they can sell then to the people in the market who make handbags and shoes and jackets and clothes and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. Really fascinating process. But when you look at pictures of this from the top down, you see this vast field of these white tanning vats and then these circular brown dye vats, and all of the circular dye vats have different color water in them, and it looks just like a game board. I mean,
it sure does.
It's uncanny. It's amazing. And I found this incredibly inspiring. In the end, I realized this is a super boring theme.
But man, the game would look cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is begging for a Euro. Okay. So I just had to see what I could do with it. So the game is called Marrakesh. And we've identified that process, right? Step one is you buy the hides from the farmers who have slaughtered their sheep. You tan them, you dye them, you dry them, you sell them. Okay. All right. Getting to my notes now.
Fall asleep board.
Yeah, there are four colors of dye. This is the real deal. Okay, red poppies, and it's what these colors are made from. So red is made from poppies. The blue dye is made from indigo. Orange dye is made from henna, and yellow dye is made from saffron. And yellow is the rarest one, and it's the most expensive one because saffron is such smaller quantities. It's so rare that they don't actually put yellow into the vats. If they want to dye something yellow, they mix the dry saffron with oil, and then they massage it into the hide manually.
Wow. So it's amazing. not to waste the yellow.
Right. That's how expensive it is, right? So I'm thinking, holy cow, these different levels of dye increasing prices, you know? So, I mean, it's made for a game, man.
Yeah.
It's really made for Euro.
Sure is.
Okay, so in Morocco, their money is called dirham. So you're not dealing with gold, you're not dealing with money, or, you know, dollars. It's dirham.
Okay.
So the order of actions in the game here, right? Because when you get hides, you have to put them through this entire process one step at a time. So on your turn, you basically move everything up one step.
That makes total sense.
Right, so... on your turn, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to, any finished leather that you have, you're going to pick up your hides, your finished leather off of the roofs of the building. You're going to sell them to the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you're going to earn dirham.
Makes okay. sense.
Okay. Then you are going to move pulled hides out of the die and up to the roof for drying. Okay. Right. That's a free action. After that, you're going to pull hides out of the tanning vats and put them into the dye vats. And depending on which dye you're going to use, you might have to spend some dirham. Okay.
Right.
All right. And then the last thing that you're going to do is you're going to buy new hides from the farmers and put them into the tanning vats. And that costs money to buy the raw hides.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, but obviously just moving pieces around alone is not enough. So there are cards in the game to drive everything. All right. And there's two decks. There's the tanning deck and the dye deck.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
And then some sort of coinage for the dirham.
And some kind of coinage. Okay. Right. Yeah. Right. And you would need some kind of tokens also to represent the hides, you know? We'll start with the die deck. The die deck is really easy. The die deck is basically, it's a deck of cards that represent, the dying vats. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to use these cards and you're going to lay them out on the table to put the hide tokens into, basically.
Right.
All right. At the start of the game, there are four of those cards laid face up, and they're available for purchase. And like we already said, red is cheap, blue is a little more expensive, orange is a little more expensive, and yellow is the highest price.
Right.
Okay? So if you are going to buy a dye vat and put it out onto the table for use, you have to buy that. Anybody can use that vat, but you have to buy it.
Okay.
You buy it, you put it in play, and then you put a marker on it to identify that as your vat.
Mm-hmm.
And so if one of the other players wants to die in that vat, they have to pay you a fee for the use of that vat.
Nice.
Okay. All right. So that's another way you can make money, right? Okay. Then, and if you buy one of those, then you just replenish from the deck. There's always four out for
and
purchase.
And you would put a card on it to determine what color it was?
A token of some kind. Well, no. The vats already have a die color already printed on them.
I see. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, right. That makes way more sense.
Right. Okay. So you know what's available for purchase. Theoretically, I think you could probably also buy a face down card from the deck if you wanted to for a flat price. And that's kind of a middle of the road price. And it's 50-50 shot, maybe. Whether
you could get saffron in there.
You could get saffron in there, or you could get red and pay too much for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Then the tanning deck is the more interesting deck. Now, the tanning deck, the card backs all just look like those rectangular white vats.
Yep.
Okay. And so at any time, you could discard a card from your hand and put it face down in front of you so the tanning side is up. And that's a new tanning vat that you can use to tan hides in.
Right.
Okay. So anytime you want, and you can only put one hide per vat per turn.
Okay.
For tanning. Okay. Yep. You can stack them up in the dye vats, but in your tanning vat, you can only do one hide at a time. So you want a lot of tanning vats in front of you so that you can process more hides at a time.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But on the other side of those dye vats, there's two pieces of information on that card. There's a farmer side and there's a market side. So at the start of the game, or start of every round, you have to discard one of those cards to the market, okay? And that card will tell you how many hides are for sale and what color leather the market wants to buy.
Nice. Okay.
So that will put out a number of hide tokens, and anybody can buy those.
Okay.
Anybody can buy those. And then that card stays out there until somebody has enough of the leather to fulfill that order, and then they're going to sell that leather to that card in the market. They're going to pick up that card as basically just as a scoring point in the end. That also removes it from the economy, and then that person then has to replace a new card from their hand.
So it's kind of like cross between goal cards and like evolution where you're putting the money out there.
Exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah.
That's interesting. I like that.
Okay. Now also some of the vat cards, the tanning vat cards might have other abilities, allow you to mess with other things. You know, maybe you can use a dye vat without, you can discard one of those or play one of those to use a dye vat without playing the use fee to to one of your opponents. Maybe you can reduce the price, for hides or get some hides for free or increase the price of selling to the market your finished leather. Those
increase
kinds of things.
Increase the price of your vats.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, probably maybe three out of four, 75% of the tanning cards will have also some kind of special power that you might be able to use for that.
Right.
Right. So then theoretically every single tanning card can be used for three or even four different things. So there's a lot of hand management involved in there, thinking about what am I going to say for later? What am I going to put down right now in front of me? And I think on every turn, you're going to draw one tanning vat card. Those are free. So, and you could probably spend dirham to get more if you want to.
Right.
Okay. And so the game goes around like that, and you're cycling through your process. And the game ends when one player has five finished market cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's ends the game. But then whoever has the highest, whoever has the most money, the most dirham, then is the winner.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the structure. Like I said, I think thematically it might be super boring.
I don't know. Like,
but I think
that's
mechanically,
the colors and stuff would make it really interesting.
Yeah, mechanically, I think it's got a lot going on.
And you could make it a faster-paced Euro, too.
Sure,
yeah. Played shorter rather than, you know.
Right.
That's cool. I think that sounds really neat. I mean, what's funny is you've taken something that really should be kind of gross, and it doesn't seem that way when you're just thinking about it, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, that's why I say read the Wikipedia article if you guys are interested in this. I won't get into it because it's nasty, dude.
All right.
It's nasty. Yeah. Tanning leather is gross.
Yeah.
It's gross. But I think it's a way to kind of celebrate that cultural heritage of Morocco in a way that, you know, people, you think about Euros being based in medieval times, right? Or in the Middle East, and they kind of romanticize that stuff. But Morocco's in northern Africa.
Right.
People don't spend time there, right? And when they do, they think about Casablanca. They don't think about Marrakesh and Fez.
Right.
And
I think it's awesome,
Yeah, so Marrakesh. Cool. It's called Marrakesh.
Nice.
Or it could be, you know, the leather markets of Marrakesh or something like that.
Or just Marrakesh.
I like Marrakesh better.
Yeah.
So that's the game.
Awesome.
I won't work on that anytime soon,
right?
Because I got too much other stuff going on. But maybe down the road, I'll take a crack at it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it could be fun.
And then, of course, as you're playing the game, you're getting more and more of these vats out there on the table. And as you're buying vats and putting them out there, then you're building this market organically and laying it out organically as it is in the city, as they built it in the city. Which I think
that's cool.
It's potentially very cool. So. We have a
voicemail here.
Let's do this.
From Nate, actually.
Oh, hey.
Hey, guys. It's Nate. I just finished listening to the Inexorable March to Death pitch. And I actually, Rob, I have two suggestions. The first is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a two-player game. You could potentially add a third player in there. But the other one was that you might want to go back and listen to your way, 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 way long ago pitch for Death of a Salesman and see if there's something there that you might be able to bring into this game. I just remember the discussion of the sort of sliding, I can't even remember what you called it, the sort of sliding scale between one end and the other for each character. So maybe that could be applicable here. Well, I'll see you guys in a few weeks at Grand Con. Can't wait till then.
Cool. Thanks, Nate. Actually, yeah. I mean, Inexorable March to the Grave was an evolution of the Death of a Salesman idea, because that original pitch as it was wasn't working, I couldn't turn it into anything that I liked. But as I came back to it and started thinking about other ways to approach that thematically, that's when it evolved into the Inexorable March to the Grave. I have thought about a third player option. I'm not sure exactly how I would implement that, but I. It's one of those things where I want to make sure that two player actually is viable before I start trying to fit in a third player idea. But yeah, but thanks for those comments.
Those are good. Yeah. I have an email that we got actually today. It's too bad that we didn't read it on the last episode. Cause like that would have been the best turnaround ever for someone with an email. But this is from Christopher. Christopher says, "Hey guys, a name idea came to mind for that Penguin versus Cthulhu game. Around on the most recent podcast."
Yeah.
I'm going to try Cthunicidae.
What?
As a poor man's shoe of Cthulhu and Spenicidae, which is the scientific classification name for penguins.
Okay.
It's a bit obtuse, but hey, we're talking Lovecraftian here, so yeah. And it does create some vaguely Lovecraftian. It does create something vaguely Lovecraftian sounding. It sure does.
That's absolutely true.
But the name is suitably sanity deprived. Oh, put that name in a suitably sanity-deprived font, and I suspect it would look very good.
Oh, yeah. That would catch some eyes on Kickstarter.
I love your podcast. Great to hear you in the creative process in motion. Very inspirational. That was cool. from Christopher. So thank you, sir.
Thanks, Christopher. Good to hear from you. Now, we always love it when new builders write us or call us for the first time.
Yeah. Maybe not new, but yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
New to us because it's the first time they've talked to us. So
yeah. Fantastic. All right.
So next week is going to be our Grand Con pre-show special, which we'll talk a bit about what's going to go on at Grand Con.
Mm-hmm. And, perhaps.
We're going to record something at Grand Con, but we're not going to do an official thing because we just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Matt Riddle to because he said he wanted us to do it and he didn't. So unless he did and we're going to show up and there's going to be like this event, but I bet he didn't. So what we're going to do is to do an episode, we're just going to get some builders together, some designers we know. And just sit around and have a fun episode talking about what we're doing, what we're playing.
We're just gonna have a little jam session, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. So, anyways, that's what we're gonna do. It'll be fun, and that will be the episode we post on the Grand Con weekend.
Yep.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how we're gonna accomplish that, but we'll figure it out.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll just bring the handheld.
Yeah. We'll
set it in the middle of the table. It'll sound like crud, but it's okay.
I'm not worried about it.
Yeah. We once recorded an episode driving in a car back from Origins with Andy.
Yeah. That went okay.
It can't sound worse than that. Right.
We're sitting in an airport after Unbub.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we did that too. That was the worst.
Yep.
So,
all right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah.
We'll see you at Grand Con. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerlin and I'm @poorly_designed. You can like us on Facebook, give us a 5-star review on iTunes and on Stitcher. We're not sure actually if Stitcher has 5 stars or 10 or what their rating system is, but give us the equivalent of 5 stars, please.
Highest rating possible.
You can call our Google Voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can go to our website, buildingthegamepodcast.com, and you can link through there to buy a copy of Water Balloon Washout or my games on the Game Crafter, which are the Rumplebum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, and finish it, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. And you can come on back all the time like you do and listen to more of this nonsense. Maybe we'll talk more about Minecraft next week. I don't know. We'll start with survival craft.
Just wait.
I hope so. Good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Oh, I hurt my back the other day, too. That sucks. I don't know how I did it. Like, I was just sitting on the couch playing a video game. And, I don't know, I was slouching, of course, right?
Nerd story, yeah.
Right, but I'm just playing a video game. And I think the cat was sitting on me, so I hadn't moved in, like, you know, 30 minutes. Completely motionless, slouching my legs out, just kind of hold my back all curled up in a way it wasn't supposed to go.
Uh-huh.
But I don't move the cat. You don't move the cat, Jason.
Right.
And the cat jumps down, so I get up to go pee or something. Is it still not going?
Still not going.
Well.
I'm sure it's fine.
I start to stand up, and then like my back seizes up, and it's like just intense, the most intense pain shooting up and down my spine that I've felt in my whole life. And I collapse on the floor and curl myself into a ball so my back is back in the position that it was. And then I just laid there on the floor kind of moaning for about 10 minutes.
Was Christine home?
Yeah, she was like panicked at first. And then I started laughing and then she started laughing and then thought I was joking. And then I tried to move and I screamed in pain again. And then she realized that I actually was in pain. But it was still really funny.
Yeah.
And that was like a week and a half ago, and my back is still killing me.
Yeah, my back hurts. Ugh. Because I've been shoveling rocks for a week.
Yeah.
I hurt my back playing video games, guys.
Yeah, just sitting wrong.
It's the nerdiest story ever.